We're talking about Thai Airways First Class Lounge offering a full spa caliber massage. I mean, this is the type, if you've ever been to Thailand, you know, they give you the little like mesh underwear. You're down to your mesh underwear, getting an oil Thai massage. You've got the ability to take a shower afterwards. You have this oasis among air world where for an hour you are just in the lap of luxury, like no other. Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Trevor Mountcastle and Tom Kim. This episode, we go to the airline products that are no longer flying, that we loved, missed, or otherwise knew about. Tom, how are you today?
Doing good. Excited for this topic. Kind of going back down memory lane, thinking about interesting things that you used to be able to do, you can't do anymore, right?
So true. So true. And we have to give credit where credit is due. We are still on Twitter, or X as it, I suppose it's called now, and we were in a conversation with Han, ironically enough, about our episode, I think it was episode 53, about some of the premium cabin experiences that he had, and he just threw in the comment of some of the products that are no longer available. And I think that just kind of spurred us to choose to talk about this for this episode.
Yeah, I mean, it's just interesting to think about some of the ways some of the airlines offered certain products and certain premium classes and certain ways they configured their airline that made them interesting and in some cases more comfortable or more aspirational. And unfortunately, some of those things aren't here anymore, right? They're just a function of maybe an aircraft that they don't fly anymore or they reconfigured or redesigned or just the way that they do things kind of landside that they don't do anymore, or something that where they might have been more generous at one time, and that generosity doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, let's be honest. COVID killed some things too.
That too.
COVID was an excuse to kill some things that might have been a little bit more luxurious than the airlines might have really been able to do. And I think the first topic that we'll start off with is probably a perfect example of that, and that is Thai First Class. They still fly, I think, a 777. They might fly it to Japan, and I think they fly it to London. Hard to find. But that's not what we're going to spend the most time talking about. It's a lounge in Bangkok.
The landside experience, right?
Well, airside, because it's after you get through security. And it's actually something that I remember rather uniquely, right? Because you go through their security, and they do have an exclusive security for first class.
They have a special area, right? There's a part of the terminal that's just for first class passengers.
Yeah, very similar to how Qatar has it and some of the other airlines have it. However, when you get through security and customs, you hop onto this little buggy. And if I recall correctly, the buggy has to be narrower because it goes through this little alleyway that's got glass on both sides. On one side, you've got the business class lounge. On the other side, I think you've got the terminal.
I like to call it the Pope Mobile.
It does look like a Pope Mobile. You've got the driver, then you've got somebody behind the driver looking forward, and then somebody's looking backward, if I recall correctly.
I think you as a passenger, I'm trying to remember now because I forget. I don't know if I've actually took a photo of this, but do you recall being seated backwards?
I thought I did. I thought my wife was forwards and I was backwards.
Yeah, or at least one of the passenger seats were backwards facing. But yeah, you've, I think, just enunciated the best part about this experience is riding this Pope Mobile through the entire length of the business class lounge on your way to the first class. I can't think of a more ridiculous way to transport oneself through an airport than basically in a special vehicle that drives through one premium class lounge on your way to another premium class lounge.
Almost purpose-built, no less, because of that narrow alleyway that they had there.
Yeah. It's the most ridiculous way to get from the curbside to your first class lounge that I can think of. I don't think anything is quite matched. It's the ostentation of riding through one lounge to get to another lounge.
And that's not where it stops, right? I mean, that is a memorable experience that one can wax philosophically for, you know, at least 2.5 minutes, I think. But there's more. Every time that I've ever been there, I'm always put into a private room. And I don't know if that's just a courtesy or what. I've never actually sat in the main area. I've ventured out into the main area, not that I've ever needed to.
I think it was once. I think once there were too many people and I did not get a private room, but I think I was in the dining area, but it was a short visit to the first class lounge on that particular occasion. Fortunately, all the times that I've had to stay there, a little bit more lengthy stay, I've also been put into the private room, which is a very, very nice way to spend your time.
It is. They've got a nice big TV. They've got some couches, and they do have the a la carte service. I've had some wonderful chicken fried rice there. Always enjoyed that. So this was so long ago. As we're still talking about the lounge itself, I can't remember what they were serving. I feel like they might have been serving like Moet Chandon, and I probably don't even pronounce that right, which is probably like horrible. But I feel like they were serving, you know, Moet Chandon Imperial, but I can't actually remember.
I felt like they served Dom on board, right? Because I think from an onboard product, I think they had that Dom Perignon, if I remember correctly.
I do remember that. Yeah. So it would make sense that they would have served Imperial on the ground, not as premium a product, but still that LVMH family.
I also remember, you know, they did have obviously full buffet. They had, of course, a la carte food. They had a very, very fancy bathroom set up, showers, of course, lots of different amenities inside the bathroom. But then also an additional amenity that is, I think, fairly unique to them, right?
I think there are other airport lounges that offer it, but nothing to this caliber.
No. Not with the amount of having a dedicated area of its size and capacity.
Well, not only that, but I think this is the only massage, and I could be wrong, I haven't had the chance to do the massage at Qantas First Class Lounge in Sydney, or trying to think of where else they have it. And we're bearing the lead here. We're talking about Thai Airways First Class Lounge offering a full spa caliber massage. I mean, this is the type, if you've ever been to Thailand, you know, they give you the little like mesh underwear. You're down to your mesh underwear, getting an oil Thai massage. You've got the ability to take a shower afterwards. You have this oasis among air world where for an hour you were just in the lap of luxury, like no other.
And the only thing I think if I remember was that spa was not actually contiguous to the first class lounge, right? It was across the hallway or something, right? You had to go.
Yes. And they would escort you across the hallway. They would do that. Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure. Yeah. I mean, from the size of the spa, the number of treatment rooms they had, the amount of staff, I felt like there was hardly any wait. You know, once you requested it, they'd be like, oh, you want a massage? Okay, let's go.
Yeah. I felt like it was, you tell us when you're ready and we'll have one ready for you. It's interesting. And I don't want to go too much on a tangent, but as our listeners know, I do like to occasionally thinking about it. I've had massages, I think, Thai, Emirates, Etihad, and Japan Airlines. I can't think of other first-class products that give or gave massages. I will say that jowl massage was my one and only side massage. Never even knew it was a thing. They have like a little, like a side pillow sort of thing, and you just sort of lay on one side, and then you lay on the other side. I don't think they were offering that the last time we were at the Jowl First Class Lounge in Haneda, where I had originally gotten it, which we talked about, I think, way back on episode one.
Yeah, I mean, again, just reminding our listeners, we're talking about bygone eras here. I don't think this is something that you can expect right now, but back in the day, this was part of the experience. This was part of why you decided to book a Thai First Class award, because it came with a lot of accoutrements, a lot of extra benefits and perks.
Yeah, and that last perk, I mean, on board, and you can still get this on first, I believe, as you mentioned, the Dom Perignon, the caviar, the service is spectacular, has been spectacular. It's just few and far between now because I think they've retired all their 747s and all their A380s, I think. So they only have first on the 777-300ERs, or the shorthand would be 77Ws. That said, going back to the heyday of Thai First Class, you would have an escort. You would have an escort from the lounge to the aircraft. There'd be a warm handoff. And then when you arrived in your destination, I feel like everywhere that I've ever been, you had a warm handoff as well. Flying into Hong Kong, they had the little buggies, you know, the more of the normal looking, you know, golf carts for six people. In Frankfurt, you had somebody that would escort you all the way to your next gate or to the lounge. In fact, one time we had our escort and we said, we're going to the first class terminal. And she says, oh, I've never heard about that. I'd love to just tag along. And so she walked all the way to the first class terminal out along the road and the taxi stand. Maybe not the most necessary experience, but it certainly adds to the value, that luxury feeling.
I'll say the walk at Hong Kong in particular, from the gates to immigration, is not a short distance. I feel like that buggy ride that they offered to the first class passengers was one of the longest buggy rides I've ever had. Just, making kind of that full length of the main spine of, the Hong Kong airport. That's a long distance.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't agree more. The funny part for our experience was we were on an A380, so it was a caravan of buggies. there must have been like five of them with all us first-class passengers going down the spine of Hong Kong airport.
Yeah, I really do miss, especially the double-decker wide-body options for first class. I think I'm pretty sure, at least on the 747-400, if I remember, it was in the nose. And then, of course, first class, which was a tremendously big cabin on the A380. I forget how many seats it is, but it was a pretty sizable part of the upper deck, right? Like, I felt like they had, how many seats do you think there were in first class on Thai Airways? It was pretty big.
I thought it was 12. I thought it was three rows of four, if I recall, because I think the biggest first class cabin is still Emirates. That's at 14, is it? Is it 14 or 16?
Yeah, it felt like a large cabin. And I only flew it once, but I flew the 747 a couple times, but 380 just the one time. But it was a very nice trip, and there was, in fact, a very special amenity kit. But we'll talk about that a little bit later, I think, as well. Another thing that has bygone, a little teaser for later.
Yeah, and the fun part is I think that little teaser will kind of tie a lot of things together. No pun intended. So we're talking about wide bodies. Let's stay on the wide body experience. Tom, I haven't flown this, but you have. Lufthansa at one point, and it's funny because I flew the precursor. I flew when they started blocking out seats. So when Lufthansa took the A380, they had the new first class seat, which I think we all know and love. It's starting to get a little tired because it's still flying on all their products. Well, at that point, the 747 had first class up on the upper deck, and they had these old, I call them NASA seats. If you ever Google NASA's 747, their seat looks very much like the old Lufthansa first class seat. That obviously was not a tenable option in the era of lay-flats, and so what Lufthansa opted to do was first they blocked out every other seat, and so you had a bed, and then you had a seat, and then they installed this gorgeous, gorgeous style seat where, well, you know what? You flew it. Why don't you tell our listeners?
Absolutely. Yeah. This was a special flight for me. I was seeking out this product, and I think this was one of the most last minute first class bookings I've ever done, because I think I was at LaGuardia Airport potentially, or was it JFK? I can't remember. It might've been JFK, but I was in one of the New York airports and I was like, huh, I wonder where I want to go to next, because I literally had a leftover throwaway segment from DC to New York. And I was like, let me just fly this thing. So I fly this thing and then I'm like, I don't know how I'm getting home, but it's going to be creative. So of course I had my laptop with me and I'm looking at, first class seats, Boston to Frankfurt on a 747-400 upper deck. What could go wrong? Or more to the point, how could I refuse? So this is a very special product. Lufthansa decided, with the curvature of that upper deck, right, there's a lot of extra space really by the windows, right? And usually that is presented to the passengers as storage bins, right? So if you both on the 380 and on the 747, you'll notice if you have a window seat on the upper deck, you'll typically have some extra kind of storage bins that just come up kind of like to like knee level, or maybe a little taller, maybe more like hip level, that you could put in, like a laptop bag or some pillows or other things. So those of you who've been on board probably recognize these things. Well, Lufthansa decided to take this real estate, and instead of doing storage bins for first class, they just extended a little bit more width-wise and actually put in essentially like a twin bed along the windows. And that way they would still have a seat as well, but rather than having the seat go fully flat, it would still recline, but it wouldn't need to go fully flat because you had literally a fully flat bed for each passenger in first. So you had a bed and a chair. That was really the unique thing. And I don't know that we have another product where a full bed and a chair, at least I know that kind of, I guess, apartments is somewhat similar, but this was actually, I think, considerably more comfortable. I don't know what the exact cushioning that Lufthansa had, but it was far superior to what's available in the apartments on an A380.
The only other examples would be, as you said, the Etihad apartments, and I think Singapore's...
Oh, yeah, maybe Singapore and their new product.
The new product, yeah. And mind you, this was, what, a decade before? Maybe, you know, 5 to 10 years before the A380 bed and seats came available. So Lufthansa was so far ahead of the curve.
This was probably 2015, if I remember correctly, late in 2015 that I took this flight. And again, you know, it was for me to experience 747-400. I happened to also experience 747-8 on the way back. I got a double dose of Lufthansa First on this kind of impromptu trip. But it was a very nice experience and it was fun. I remember taking off from Boston Logan, first time doing that on an international flight. I remember seeing a 757. I think this was the Secretary of State's plane. I think this was a John Kerry at the time. His plane was there at Logan. And I just remember being just an exceptional flight, just enjoying it. I had a hard time sleeping, actually, because, you know, of course, you wanted to kind of experience it. And of course, Boston to Germany is not exactly the long, or in Frankfurt is not exactly the longest flight over the Atlantic. So did not have, I would say, a full evening of sleep to enjoy this product, but did manage to get a couple winks in, if I remember correctly. Had wonderful meal, wonderful service. It, of course, enjoyed all the roses that they put into the first class seats. And all the lighting and everything and the atmosphere was just, it's just magical.
For such a short flight, probably one of the shortest over the Atlantic, Boston gets some of the nicest aircraft. I mean, they had the A380, I think, gone to Munich for a while, I suppose last year. Definitely one of those, you know, flying under the radar type transatlantic gateways. Before we leave Lufthansa, you mentioned the 747-8 experience. I assume you flew that into Dulles?
Yes. With you, I believe, at least one time.
I think more than one time, my friend. So in the old days, I say the old days of the 747-8i before the pandemic, they did have something that I don't think anybody who hasn't flown through Dulles will understand how impactful this is. But Lufthansa First Class would have a Sprinter, a little Sprinter van, little Mercedes Sprinter. And so the normal experience for Dulles is you come into the B terminal, you walk maybe a couple hundred feet, and then you get on to these mobile lounges that then take you to either the transit customs and immigration over in Terminal C, or bring you to the customs hall if you're arriving. And you pretty much get stacked in there. I've had experiences not on never flying Lufthansa, but flying other airlines where people just refuse to walk fully into these mobile lounges. And the result is that the staff are literally yelling at you saying, hey, you're not going anywhere until you go further in. Not the experience that you want when you're arriving on a first class experience, when you're arriving first into the country. Well, Lufthansa has a better way.
Yeah, talk about back to reality, right? You know, having to get on one of these mobile lounges after a transatlantic flight on Lufthansa First. I mean, that's a rude awakening.
It is. And unfortunately, we've had that a couple of times, haven't we, recently? But for a period of time, Lufthansa had this little Sprinter van. You get down there, they pop your luggage in the back, you hop in, and they drive you across the tarmac, not terribly long drive, and they bring you back to this, I call it a secret door. This door, you walk in, you know, after the retinal scan or whatever else they have to do to get in, and you are right exactly by the global entry kiosks. You're like 30 seconds to global entry. You're probably 60 seconds and you're already in the baggage claim area if you don't do any checking of baggage. From that moment that they open that door, I can be landside in about 2.5 minutes, maybe even 2 minutes if I'm walking exceptionally fast.
It's truly the height of civility and kind of stellar ground service that almost nobody else does, right? I mean, like that is a singular. I mean, I don't know, maybe if you're like a global services or some sort of weird concierge key or, you know, somebody somewhere, maybe there's something similar. But for most premium passengers, that level of ground service is yet to be replicated unless you're flying private, I think.
I couldn't agree more. And I truly miss it. So Lufthansa, if you're listening, we'd love that back if you could.
I mean, they were able to pull it off before. Hopefully it is something that comes back. It's definitely nothing. I don't think there's anything stopping them from offering it. And definitely, again, pinnacle of ground service that would be amazing to see again.
Truly the height of civility, that little bit of a private ride across the tarmac at Dulles Airport from Lufthansa.
Yep. Fond memories. Hope it comes back. So, you know, I think there's some fun stuff. I mean, I think we talked about quite a few things that we have some shared experience in. This next item is something I never got to experience, you know, because I actually never flew Qatar Airways before they moved to Hamad International Airport. But I believe you have, right?
Oh, my friend, I have unfortunately put a lot of time in flying pre-Hamad International Airport. The cool thing is, almost a humble brag, or I don't know what to say, but I've actually never seen the normal airport before Hamad opened. I only saw the premium terminal, because if you flew in a premium cabin, they took you there on a bus. Everything was remote gates. They had the kind of fancy remote buses or buses that had, like, you know, a little bit of extra room. You're not like crunched in.
Are they pretty similar to the buses they still continue to use now?
They are. Yes. Yeah. It's just kind of a cool little experience. You've got like the little bit of like a extra space.
So think of a school bus, but then think of every seat as a throne.
Yeah. Yes. And not yellow.
They even have a little cutout for your, you know, roller bag that, so it doesn't roll around. You know, there's like a little place for you to like roll it into its little space next to your throne so that it doesn't go roaming around the bus.
Exactly. I mean, it's luxury, right?
Yes.
And so they have this freestanding, or had this freestanding premium terminal. They did have a first class area. My wife and I attempted to walk in there. We did. Nobody told us no. I went off, took a shower, came back. My wife was not very happy because they were trying to kick us out. But I enjoyed the shower. They had a nice little restaurant area, a bunch of napping areas, including some of those chaises. And just a generally nice experience. My primary experience there that I think back to was, unfortunately, our first time flying Qatar, where we flew Madrid to Doha and then Doha to Denpasar, Bali. And it was one of those kind of marathon trips because we had to get to Madrid first, which is a whole nother story for another episode. I will just say that because nothing was simple on this trip. And we were supposed to fly out around 11 or midnight, and they had the inbound was delayed 5 hours. And so what was supposed to be a red eye flight ended up being a first in the morning flight. And so they completely discombobulated us. They didn't give us a hotel or anything. I think it was so early in my frequent travel experience or my award travel experience, I didn't know what to ask for. And so we ended up sleeping in the terminal, in this premium terminal.
Oh my.
Yeah.
They
had chaise lounges with blankets, and we were able to snaggle a couple, but it was not the greatest experience. I do remember amazing sandwiches that were even better than the ones in the current lounge that they have now in Hamad International. But the experience, the ability to just go right to a premium terminal, you know, they had a store there. We got a 787 model, one of our first, you know, 1-200 scale models, the restaurant, a little snack area. The overall experience, I thought, was really exclusive, almost more exclusive than the current experience. But I think the current experience is more luxurious. And I just thought that was entirely unique as I was thinking about it when we were preparing for this, that I have no idea what that economy experience was. We were so insulated from that we had no idea. I mean, if that's not kind of a luxurious experience, I don't know what is. And I realize this, I'm going to get ire for this one. You know, I might, right? Like, I'm not saying that I never want to see how economy fares or economy does or see economy passengers or have to walk through the main airport. I'm just saying this was an experience where we never did. And it was just a very unique experience.
Only me, we both never experienced Qatar economy class.
No, I've yet to.
Neither have I.
This is not a complaint. I will die happy if that's not something I have to worry about.
I've managed to also keep my run of not experiencing Lufthansa business class. So,
yeah, that is going to be a hard run to keep. I will just say.
Maybe I won't mind so much once, what is it, Allegris? Once all the aircraft are you're not having to play footsie with your neighbors in business class. Yeah, then maybe I won't mind so much.
You mean the new seat that you'll have like 20 different seat configurations to choose from?
Yeah, you'll have to figure out like, which roulette wheel slot I'm going to happen to land in that day.
Do you want the extra long? Do you want the short? Do you want the window? Do you want the window with the extra long? Do you want the middle?
Every seat is a bespoke seat. You have all these choices.
I would be absolutely astonished if they don't charge a seat fee like Swiss does.
Oh, I'm sure they will.
Okay, another tangent. Did you hear about Swiss's seat, their first class seat? It's so heavy that they have to put a weight, I think, in the tail of the aircraft to maintain balance.
Oh, to counterbalance it. Yeah, I think I did read that. Yeah, that's some dumb engineering. Somebody needs to be fired.
That's either really poor planning or a really strong commitment to your premium product.
Well, some engineer didn't do their work, because weight and balance seems to be a rather big preoccupation with mechanical engineers that work on airplanes. So you'd think they'd be sweating those details, but someone obviously didn't.
One would think so, yeah. Let's shift gears a little bit. This is one that I haven't had the chance to do. Even though I had signed up, I just couldn't make it work.
Not for lack of effort, right? Not for lack of trying.
No. At one point, I was on the way to the airport when I got notification that it was canceled. The flight was canceled.
I would like to say how many times that happened to me too. I mean, that was part of the deal, I think, with this thing.
Yeah. And so we talked about how exclusive Qatar Airways business class was when they had the freestanding premium terminal. This is even more exclusive because you've got a separate private jet terminal specifically for private aircraft. And the particular deal or experience was JetSmarter. Now, is JetSmarter even still around? I know there are other types.
I don't think so. I don't know the entity exists anymore. It's actually kind of interesting. It's very similar to Thai First Class in a way, because as it turns out, Thai First Class was not economically sustainable, right? It was a product that was way luxurious for a market and for a clientele that could not, in fact, pay for it, or at least cause that product to continue to be profitable. And I think JetSmarter was another one of these. I mean, this was in the heydays of Uber and the sharing economy. And of course, JetSmarter was all about how do we monetize all these dead legs, you know, all these private aviation flights that they do just to position these planes to where they actually need to be. And of course, some bright genius said, oh, I can get a whole bunch of investors to spend money on what will be the new Uber for private jets, which that's what the kind of the selling point of JetSmarter was. And, you know, for us, you know, normal people that can't afford timeshare on private jets, just for a few thousand dollars, or actually in some cases, you could kind of get a very short subscription on this on like Founders Card, which I know quite a few people did that as well to try to get this. You could get a membership to JetSmarter and have access to these empty legs for literally, I think, nothing, right? I think it was just if you could sign up and you could book it, and again, it was first come, first serve, on the app, you could fly these dead legs.
Yeah, so the part I got in on was that you had to demonstrate that you had premium or top-tier elite status. And so I think at the time, all I had to do was show my executive platinum status, and then they gave me a membership. And it was no cost for the first, I think, year. Maybe it was 14 months. It was something weird like that. And then you'd get these notifications for the empty legs. And they flew a lot out of Dulles. They flew far fewer out of BWI. But as I said, we had dropped the dog off at the boarding, and we were on the road on our way when we got this notification, and we were just bummed. We didn't even know what the heck we were going to do. It was a one way down to Raleigh. And I'm like, I have no idea what we're going to do in Raleigh, how we're going to get home. We're just getting on a plane and we're just going to do it. But you had many experiences, didn't you?
I did. I actually got to fly from Dulles to BWI.
Oh, really?
Believe it or not. With my dad, I think, if I remember correctly, I think that's where we went. Oh, you know, actually, he might have. I think we actually flew up to New York. But I do recall also doing, just believe it or not, yeah, that short flight from Dulles to BWI, just to say that I could do it.
That would be amazing to be able to do. They used to fly that commercial, I think, like eons ago. There used to be an actual scheduled flight between BWI and Dulles.
That wouldn't surprise me. And they have them between BWI and Philadelphia, which is another very short flight. But they may still have those, believe it or not.
They do. I'm fairly certain that they still have BWI to Philly. I don't think I've ever seen a Philly to Dulles, though.
So I did have a JetSmarter membership, which I did not get for free. I did actually have to pay for it. And so friends turned me on to this because I think at the very beginning, there was even some options where if you had a paid membership and they canceled on you, they would rebook you potentially on a revenue commercial flight.
Oh, I remember that.
If they, in fact, confirmed the flight after you booked it. So that was kind of the play that I think I was kind of turned on to. That, okay, well, maybe I'll spend some money and see if I can kind of use this to get some interesting commercial flying as well. Unfortunately, they kind of stopped that not too long after I bought the membership. But, you know, I did actually get to fly private quite a few times. I got my dad on a flight. I got my mom on a flight. I got my brother on a flight. I flew with some of my friends on some of the shuttles that they had because they, for a while there, would actually run, I think, Fort Lauderdale to Midway on a Gulfstream, which was amazing. That was a really fun thing to fly. They had a shuttle, I think, from Dulles to Teterboro. That was something that they would do on occasion. So they had a couple of these routes even where they would not just dead leg, but, you know, actually have scheduled kind of service on JetSmarter for its members. And so it, you know, again, it wasn't cheap, a couple thousand dollars, but, you know, I felt like I got good value out of it. I got some other kind of perks. I actually got a blazer out of it as part of it, the deal. One of these tailor shops partnered with JetSmarter and actually gave JetSmarter members free jackets, hoping that they'd go buy some other stuff while they happened to be there. But nope, I just came for the free jacket. And
mark that on a unique thing.
Yes.
A sports jacket from a fractional jet service. That seems like a pretty unique thing.
I wish it was a fractional jet service. It's probably not even a fractional jet service. Let's just say it's a private jet Uber.
Private jet Uber. Okay, we'll go with that.
Yeah, that's probably the closest you're going to get. But, you know, it was fun. I flew on a bunch of Challengers, flew on a Gulfstream, flew on a Learjet, flew on some Cessna Citations. So managed to actually sample quite a bit of what's out there from a private jet standpoint. And, you know, got to really experience the fun part of, you know, going to these FBOs, you know, these private terminals. So again, JetSmarter is not available any longer. There are other services that are similar that are still available. I just think that, unfortunately, probably the golden age of, you know, they were really putting some money into this thing. They clearly had raised some money and were trying to make it this aspirational lifestyle thing. And I don't know that any of the services that have taken or that stick around have been as lucrative from a being able to fly at a low cost as JetSmarter since that's been around. I think it's been a lot harder. Maybe there've been some kind of specific opportunity, especially if you happen to be in some of these areas, you know, I guess if you live in Augusta or something, or, you know, live in some of these places where the private jets are a very, very common fixture, you know, at the airport. But it's been a little harder with some of the alternatives, even out here in DC, which is not exactly a small private aviation market.
Yeah, I think I see a lot more now in Florida and that Southeast, as well as over in California. What I've been getting notes from is a company called Vaunt. And I'm seeing, you know, we're looking into the four figures for a membership, and you get either credits or something, or you're going after empty legs and it's, you know, first come, first serve. So it's not nearly as lucrative as JetSmarter.
And there's lots of upsells, I think, as well. Yeah, I think there's a lot of upsell opportunities to try to get you a little bit toward the top of these lists to do stuff. And even then, it can be very hard.
Absolutely. I appreciate that you topped my comment about the premium terminal and not seeing economy people by regaling us on the amount of private jets that you have flown of so many different varieties. I'm jealous about the Gulfstream. I'm jealous about all of them. But shifting gears, I think there's another one that's an interesting thing. On episode 53, I think we talked with Han, and he talked about how he had the private car transfer for his Etihad residence. In the old days, they used to offer that for Etihad apartments as well as Etihad First, and I think even Etihad Business. We had a rather unique experience flying Etihad First one time, flying from Dulles to Abu Dhabi. Do you want to share that little brief story? We probably need to do an episode on that total experience.
Oh, it does. This will be the amuse-bouche of that episode. It absolutely was. But just to set up that episode and kind of what we're talking about here, we had a unique opportunity where Etihad, for whatever reason, had opened up space on that route, the Dulles to Abu Dhabi route. And we were able to get the vast majority of that cabin, right? Because we had, what, was it 8 seats?
Yeah, I think it was 8 seats. Was it 8 seats out of 12 or was it 6 out of 8?
Maybe we're 6 seats out of 8. Maybe that's what it was.
I think it was 6 out of 8. Yeah.
And maybe that's what it was. That makes more sense. 2 rows of 4. But, you know, again, we had the preponderance of that cabin. And of course, what that meant was when we landed in Abu Dhabi, and because even though this was an award ticket, we did, in fact, have free car transfer service. We ended up with quite the caravan because, as one does, we fly into Abu Dhabi airport. But of course, we're not staying there. We're staying in Dubai. And of course, we made full use of the fact that Dubai is still in the United Arab Emirates and part of the range of the offered car service, even on first class awards. Of course, within about, I think, 2 to 3 months of us doing this, they got rid of this perk for awards. So we were very happy to be able to be a part of this last blast. But I think we had a caravan of, I think, at least 4 luxury sedans making our way to the, I think, the Grand Hyatt, if I remember correctly, from the Abu Dhabi airport.
Yeah, I think it was 4 Audi A6s, if I recall correctly. I mean, I just remember these were not chintzy cars. They had the like red leather. This was very comfortable, and it was like an hour drive, give or take. Somehow, all 4 of these guys stayed in convoy. I mean, it almost felt like you had a really exclusive experience.
Yeah, it's like we were diplomats or something. Of course, we did have special passengers, you know, including a giraffe. But again, that's probably for another travel story.
Yes, yes, yes. But again, you know, another one of those unique experiences. Emirates offered the same thing, much less exciting, I suppose, because you're going from Dubai airport and you're not really going very far because you're already in Dubai. But Emirates did offer that for one period of time. I don't believe they offer that anymore. And I don't know if they offered that for business and first or just first. I only had the experience when I was flying in first. Why don't we close out the true premium cabin experience discussion with something that eluded both of us?
Yes. So that would be not only a cabin that no longer exists, but an airline that no longer exists, or at least not in its original form.
Yeah.
That would be TAM Airways, right? One of the carriers from our the great country of Brazil that is now part of LATAM.
Because for our listeners, you don't get many episodes where I don't lament LATAM. I won't lament LATAM TAM. This time.
LATAM or TAM?
I was trying to do a play on words. I don't have a problem with TAM. It's the land product that's not great. The TAM product, when they were flying, they had, is it the BE Aerospace? I always get the name of the seat wrong, but the TAM 777s flew the same product as the old Continental Business First or Business Elite, whatever they called it, where you had like, you're playing footsie, but you at least had lay flats and they seemed to be fairly comfortable. But we're not talking about business class. We're talking about their first class experience, which when you look at the blogs, and we'll include a link to one of Lucky's posts, 1 mile at a time, it looks probably more similar to a Air France La Première than anything else I can think of.
That's probably a pretty good thing to compare to because, you know, it was just one row, right? It was just that first row of the 777. And they had, at least the middle seats, had this incredibly long bench, right? I mean, this was like have 2 adults, you know, sit one on top of each other lengthwise, right? You know, basically half the width of the plane, right? This one piece of furniture almost with seatbelts nonetheless, right? That you could, you know, obviously maybe share a meal, you know, if you wanted to sit face to face with the person in the first class seat. But this looked almost like a sectional in a living room, really. I mean, for our listeners trying to explain what it looks like from a pictorial sense. And it was pretty unique. Like, I don't think there was another first class product like it.
Yeah. I mean, you could literally have a teenager lying across the bench at your feet. It's that big. And then that table that extends. I mean, it literally looks like you've got furniture on a plane. I mean, for lack of a better way of saying
it. It's like a sunken living room.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Exactly. And it's only one row, so there's only 4 seats. So it's very, very exclusive. For the life of me, with a little bit of research that I did, I couldn't figure out what their onboard product really had from a, you know, a meal type perspective. They do give pajamas. I mean, that's kind of expected at that caliber. Some of their glassware from the trip reports I saw looked absolutely amazing, but I didn't see anything really talking about, like, you know, do they serve Dom? Do they serve something else? I assume that that's probably not where they really excel.
I think the hard product is why you fly this particular seat, probably not the soft product.
Yeah, that's definitely what it looks like. Although I do see a reference to Haagen-Dazs ice cream.
What is it with South American ice cream, you know? I mean, the people in South America seem to be very, very pro ice cream.
I'm here for it. I am here for it. I love that pro ice cream approach. I truly, truly do.
Just as long as it's not Chilean, right? Because you apparently don't like any airline that has anything to do with Chile, whether they be LAN Chile or LATAM Chile.
Oh, gosh. I have no problem with Chile. I just think LATAM is just, like, all their seats are outdated.
You have a problem with their aviation, my friend. You have a problem with their aviation. Of course, they never had a first class product. They only had business class, right?
I mean, well, that's part of the problem. But I think they just need to update their seats. I mean, the aircraft are tired. The aircraft they sold to Delta, those were tired too.
The brand new aircraft they sold to Delta, some of which probably never flew under the LATAM flag.
And it was still tired. Okay. We're going to move past this.
Wow.
One of these days.
Nothing compares to a Trevor Spurned. <You know? laughs> This man, I mean, he holds on to things and tight.
And I'm still going to give LATAM another shot. I'm still going to give them a shot. And if they announce a new business class product, I will be right in line to fly them again. I'm not scorned. Okay, maybe a little bit.
I don't know, man. I don't know. But, you know, otherwise, you know, I will say, as far as especially South American airlines go, LATAM is not the worst tool in the cabinet, if you ask me. Their lounges are nice. They run a good airline.
That they do. Okay, we had a section on economy, but to be honest with you, I can't really speak to any of that. Do you want to talk just really briefly?
You know, it's funny that if that's how we're going to finish out the episode, well, maybe we won't finish out the episode, but, you know, I have to give some honorable mentions because I would love to speak to them, because one of them, at least two of these, believe it or not, economy products, I have a very fond place in my memory for that do not exist anymore. One of them is, I think, 100% the result of regulation. If you recall, American had these 737, I think 700s, that had exactly 150 seats. Why is that number important, Trevor?
Because you need a flight attendant for every 50 seats?
Correct. Ding, 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 ding. Let's give the man a prize. And the prize you would have gotten was there were several rows of seats on these planes in economy where there was a blocked out middle seat. You essentially had Euro business, you know, in economy because they intentionally blocked these seats out so that the seat count in economy or for the plane in total was under 150. So they wouldn't have to staff that extra flight attendant. And the bean counters, I guess, at American thought this made perfect sense. That didn't last. The minute they merged with US Airways, these were gone so quick, you know, it was amazing. But, you know, in that intervening time where I flew American and they had this product, I had fond memories because, you know, if I was stuck in the back, I knew that these seats existed. I knew where they were. That would be my place of choice if I were sitting in economy.
It's interesting. Southwest crammed a whole lot more seats, and it was a hard worker, the 737-700. Still is.
Yes.
They're frustrated that they can't get a 737-7 or a MAX 7, I guess.
The other economy seat that also I had the pleasure of flying, which again, no longer on this planet, no longer available, Air France flew an A380. That, believe it or not, had a fairly large economy section on the upper deck. Their first class was on the first deck. Business class was on almost the entire second deck. But the very back aft portion of the aircraft was economy. And I got to tell you, upper deck window on the back section, amazing experience. So quiet, so luxurious. Again, if I was having to fly over the Atlantic in economy, I would not mind doing it on an A380. In Air France economy. It was actually very pleasant.
I can actually say that I do understand that experience because my first flight on an A380 was doing the same exact thing, except it was on Singapore back when they had a small mini cabin in economy on the upper deck. We were flying from Singapore to London and we had exit aisle seats. So I had leg room for days and it was very, very nice. We ended up getting that by going over to the Singapore office in Ion Orchard And they just took one look at me and said, we're going to change your seats.
Yeah.
And about 10, 15 minutes later, we were just astonished. This was our first round the world trip. We did it all in economy. And that nice person in Iron Orchard really made the trip so much more luxurious for an economy trip, so much more bearable, and has left us with such a great opinion of Singapore, which they just reinforce every time.
I think you can still get premium economy, I think, upper deck on some Qantas planes. I think that that might still exist. But I think it's probably hard to find an upper deck economy on an A380 these days.
Yeah, probably a fair statement. Okay, we've teased this for part of this episode. I feel like we've got to get to the really fun part. So we've talked about aircraft and premium seats and even economy seats that don't exist anymore in the sky. We haven't talked about the amenities. And there's one amenity, you know, one piece of the amenity, you know, experience that I think we wanted to talk about, and that is the amenity kits. Now, there's one particular kit, and you have a full-sized version of it, as well as many, many of the actual amenity kits. I think you need to...
These are prized possessions. These are things that will leave my cold, dead hands before they leave the earth. Or maybe that's when they will leave my possession, is when I leave this dead, you know, earth. But anyway, they are very prized possessions. These are things that are among the most prized and valued amenity kits that have ever existed.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. So what are they, Tom?
They are Rimowa, and this was a brand standard for quite a few Star Alliance first class carriers. And in fact, they were even available on some business class carriers. EVA, I'm talking to you. You guys get extra credit. Gold Star, you were, I think, the only ones I have that actually offered me this amenity kit in a business class cabin. But I have one of those too. And again, very prized possession. Will not give up or give to anyone.
Let's just say this before we go in further. EVA is probably as close to a first-class business class as you're going to get. They had a beautiful reverse herringbone seat, standard business class. They had Rimowa amenity kits, and they served Krug and pajamas, and they had Hello Kitty-themed aircraft right down to the toilet paper. I don't know how... that's effectively, for Star Alliance, as good as it gets.
Pretty damn good.
So what other airlines had the Rimowa amenity kits, Tom?
Well, clearly the one we teased earlier, Thai Airways. I actually have two from Thai Airways, you know, one from flying their 747 first class. And then, of course, I think I managed to snag an unopened red Thai Airways Rimowa when I was on a 380 flight. And I did, as an amazing gesture to a friend of mine, offer up the spare one at great personal expense to my friend who happens to be on this podcast with me.
And it sits in a place of honor.
I can only imagine. Yes.
It's displayed to all of the guests that darken our door.
Yes. I mean, the rest, I think, are primarily from Lufthansa. I think that's the primary other carrier that I recall flying that offered them. There may have been, I think at one time, some maybe that were offered, I think, from ANA. I unfortunately don't think I ever flew ANA first when they were offered. But I think the majority of mine are either going to be Thai, EVA, or Lufthansa at this point.
Yeah, I think I have a silver one from ANA. And then I think I've got a...
Oh, and Singapore. I think I have a Singapore one. I think that is the only other one that I might have.
I've never known Singapore to have them. They usually have Givenchy.
Or maybe it's not. Maybe I'm lying.
Is it Givenchy?
Givenchy.
Givenchy. I'll get my French accent better. I've only known them to have the Givenchy. I couldn't even get it right, even when you... I apologize for our French listeners. I'm not trying to bastardize your language.
The entertainment value alone has been incredible. Thank you.
You are the luxury product expert in my life.
Yes. I think the one that I got was Ferragamo, I think, was what they were offering at the time. I flew a Singapore F a couple of times because I got a couple of those. I do particularly do like the male cologne that they provided. It's actually pretty nice, but I think I may have misspoke. I don't think it must have just been Thai, Lufthansa, and EVA that managed to be my small collection.
And ANA, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I never got one in ANA. I strangely enough, I think the ANA one I got was like a Samsonite, but kind of weird, but that's what I recall getting when I flew ANA first.
Yeah, they switched it at one point, I remember that. I mean, I've only flown ANA first once, that kind of square class with the like the very blue, the very blue square type seat. And I think that was the one that I was able to get that Rimowa. You know, the interesting thing before we close out, I had the chance to go to the Rimowa factory. They make these polycarbonate little amenity kits up in Toronto or just outside of Toronto. And it's really cool how they sort of just pop the air into them to be able to get the shell. I don't know if they make the polycarbonates in Germany as well, but that factory in Toronto was quite insightful. And at the time we were there, they were making the EVA air little mini amenity kits, or at least the shells for them, because they had the green ones, you know, that beautiful kind of like emerald or hunter green. And they did them in sheets. So it wasn't like just one. It was like a sheet of, I don't know, six or nine. And it was just, like I said, it was just a cool thing to be able to see. That was probably also back before LVMH bought Rimowa.
I'm pretty sure it was. It's only been the last few years that they own them. And, you know, they've definitely made quite a few changes to them.
Yeah. I think I've lost track on all of those.
Unfortunately, one of them being not providing them to airlines anymore.
That's the hardest one. That's the hardest one.
Yes. Bring it back, LVMH. Bring it back.
I'll give Porsche Design an honorable mention. Lufthansa had them early on, like probably 2011, 2012. And those are still some of our favorite amenity kits that are not Rimowa. And we use them on such a regular basis because they're so well made and just so stylish looking. Well, that's the show. Thanks for joining us. And we hope you enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Milenomics Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.